Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Dustin Harrison Atlas,
who directed the new documentary, New Chefs on the Block, which will be playing at AFI Docs. Dusty, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
In full disclosure, we actually went to AU together, and I know you've been pounding away at the craft, and I know you worked over at Discovery in Silver Spring, and you always dreamed of it playing at AFI Docs. What's it like to finally be in?
I mean, it is absolutely unreal. Yeah, I worked at Discovery for 3 years and would walk by the AFI Silver Theater and be like, man, I'm going to have a feature doc here someday. And almost exactly 10 years later, it happened, and it's a dream come true if there ever was one, and the fact that we're a spotlight film is even more mind-blowing.
Now, I think I also saw that the DC Film Office just named you Filmmaker of the Month. How'd that happen?
So they just reached out of the blue, and I was shocked and incredibly honored, and it's a real thrill. And I think, you know, the most exciting thing for me is that I've done something with my career and that I feel like I left a mark on the DC film scene, and that's exciting to me.
And the DC food scene.
And the DC food scene, absolutely.
Before we get into AFI Docs, where else has it played in the run-up to this? You mentioned that there off the air that there was a couple festivals that it's already played at.
Yeah, so our world premiere was at Cinequest, and we won an audience favorite award there, which was super cool.
Nice.
And we've played at Hot Docs in Toronto, which was an amazing experience. We had 1,300 people see the film in 3 days.
Wow.
That's incredible.
What's it like sitting in the audience, and because that's at these festivals, that's what you do as a filmmaker. You kind of have one eye on the screen and you're looking out the corner of your eye, right?
Oh,
to
that's
watch the crowd.
yeah, you're absolutely right. That's all I like half the time. I'm just staring in people's faces, knowing when the next joke is coming to see whether or not they're going to laugh or cry.
Right.
And it is the most satisfying feeling after spending 4 years, you know, basically 2.5, 3 years of filming and then a year of post production. It is just an unbelievable feeling to have such a positive response from both the festivals and the people. I was just in Seattle International, and all the theaters we played in were packed, and it's special. It really is.
And then it's gonna be that times 10 at AFI Docs. It's gonna be great, man.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, I mean, we can circle back around to some of that stuff later, but before we get too far in, our listeners aren't familiar. Let's pretend they don't know anything.
Sure.
Give them the basic premise.
Sure. So New Chefs on the Block is a feature film about two chefs in DC that struggle to open and maintain their first restaurants. The first one is Frank Lynn of Frankly Pizza up in Kensington, Maryland. And
that's right, where Connecticut Avenue almost breaks off to University Boulevard,
right?
That's right.
Yep. Yep. And the other one is Rose's Luxury in Barracks Road, D.C.
Awesome.
So
how did you, and what does the story tell? It charts what, them opening the first year of opening? Or?
So, yeah, so it started as a project where I was going to follow them from construction through their first year of business. Mm-hmm. So it was going to be a year and a half of filming. But incredible construction delays and unbelievable accolades made it something that I simply could not stop filming. So filming really did go almost twice as long as I thought it would. One of the restaurants ends up winning Best New Restaurant in the country from Bon Appetit magazine.
We won't tell you which one, but if you're familiar with Bon Appetit, you probably know which one.
Yeah. And so both restaurants are doing incredibly well. And while I was filming in there and they were all doing, you know, amazingly well, they were all calling me the rabbit's foot, which was pretty funny.
Oh, that's awesome. Even taking it back just to the inception, how did you get the idea I want to, you know, explore these restaurants? And then how do you pick these two?
Sure. Great question. So I love stories about hard work paying off in the face of great odds. And I was kind of looking for a long-term documentary to jump on. And it was always my dream to be in on the ground zero of something. That's sort of every documentary filmmaker's dream. And when my brother-in-law, Frank Lynn, decided he was going to open his first restaurant.
So you're the brother-in-law.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
That's right. And so when he said to me, I'm going to open my first restaurant and I'm going to build it by hand with my mother, my father, and my wife, I was like, that's it. That sounds like a phenomenal film. And I knew it was going to take him a long time to find a space. So I went online and I Googled new chefs in DC opening their first restaurants because I wanted to compare them to somebody else who was maybe doing a more expensive restaurant. Right. The first guy that pops up is Aaron Silverman and his concept, Rose's Luxury, and it was their Kickstarter campaign.
Wow.
And
it's so weird to think in hindsight, because now it's the Rose's Luxury,
right,
award-winning, you know,
right,
but to think you were kind of founded on the Kickstarter phase.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
so wild.
Absolutely, and they were just doing pop-ups, and he had not started construction yet, and all they had was their space. So he invited me in, and I met their crew at a pop-up, and I tasted their food, and I'm not a foodie,
right.
But, you know, I knew special when I tasted it, mm-hmm. and his philosophy was very different. He was, you know, staff first, and he was in the making people happy business, not the restaurant business, and, you know, it was different and almost cultish, and you know, different is great for a documentary. So I knew
it
was a hint.
So pretty quickly, you had sort of your, you know, I guess your sort of your parallel action of the brother-in-law that you know, sort of I guess the smaller operation local that you know, and then also the I guess the more the expensive one that you know was going. And so how does that actually play out in the doc for people that haven't seen it? You're cutting back between the two, interviewing the, you know, what do we see?
Sure. So I shot it on all prime lenses, which means that rather than doing a fly on the wall film, I call it a fly on the plate film.
I love it.
I wanted it to be super, super intimate.
Which when you're eating, you don't want, but in film, it's fantastic.
Right, exactly. So I take the audience into the kitchens and, you know, you're standing right next to the chefs as they're having super intense personal moments.
That's awesome.
And just had unbelievable access from the very beginning with both of these kitchens. And to me, what makes it a really special film is that it's not about, you know, the chefs and their food. It's about the chefs and their staffs and what and who it takes to open and maintain a restaurant. So you get to know the kitchen staff, the wait staff, including, you know, the dishwasher and yeah. and people who have seen the film are like, I want more of the dishwasher. But, you know, the foodies get plenty of the food porn.
Right.
But it's a really kind of different documentary in that you get into the nuts and bolts of the people and what it takes, which is exciting to me.
That's awesome. Awesome. I want to sort of explore each restaurant individually and sort of how you approach, you know, going in there and shooting in those individual spaces. So let's start with Frankly Pizza in Kensington.
So I decided to shoot the film by myself because there simply was no space for anyone else. If I had had a larger crew in there, the chefs would not have been very happy. Right. So I decided to, you know, go in there, shoot it by myself and work, you know, cruising around the staff and, you know, in the back. And just the thing I'm most thrilled about is that I never knocked over any plates and I never hit anyone in the face with my camera. So that was really tough. So I shot it on a Panasonic AF100.
Okay.
And I was doing all the sound by myself.
Oh, wow.
All the lens changes by myself.
Did you set up any lights or did they not want any of that stuff in
they,
there?
During service, they did not let me set up any lights.
Right.
The other most obnoxious thing is the chefs wouldn't turn the music off.
Oh, right.
So that was pretty tough. So it was hard work getting great sound, but it all worked out in the end. And, you know, had some awesome posts done by Max Lorenzen, who's an AU grad.
Oh, nice.
So the interviews, though, were different. So the interviews are all beautifully lit. And I think what's special about the interviews is that I place the chefs in the center of their restaurants, which helps you see the evolution of the restaurants, as well as just keeps you in there. So there's no green screen, there's no, you know, black background or anything like that. So you always feel like you're in the space.
So the surroundings behind them literally changes as the restaurant is constructed and evolves. You see that in the background.
Exactly.
That's pretty clever of you, sir.
Thank you very much.
What's the biggest challenge of shooting in Frankly Pizza? I mean, is it just the tight space?
The
music playing?
Yeah, the biggest challenge really was that, you know, the chefs were busy and the space was super tight and super hot and, you know, it's always jam-packed in there. So that's not easy. So I have to be very careful with my camera and my gear not to hit anyone. And so I was pretty proud I didn't break anything.
And on this, at the same time, like charting that chef journey, it's your brother-in-law. So how do you sort of like, I mean, on the one hand, it gives you, I guess, more insights of what questions to ask and things. But the other side, how do you sort of like detach yourself and treat him as, you know, character art?
Sure. So that's a great question. Even though Frank is my brother-in-law, we made a deal. And that was he absolutely agreed to be in the film, but he made me promise that I would tell the real story. And I absolutely did that. And you'll see in there that, you know, some of this stuff is, you know, really, really personal, especially with him and his wife. And amazingly, his wife becomes a huge part of the story.
Wow.
And that's, you know, something else that you don't see a lot in the show. Yeah. Well, my sister-in-law.
Oh, sister-in-law. Okay.
Yeah. So, we just kind of made a deal that, you know, it was going to be a mutually beneficial relationship, and I wanted this to be super intimate, and I didn't want it to be a philosophical film about why their food is so delicious or why they do what they do.
More of a personal thing everyone can relate to.
Right. So he was absolutely open and willing to do that.
I want people to go see the movie, but is there a teaser of why the wife becomes? Is it just the strain it places on, you know, pure hours you have to put into building a restaurant and taking away from family life?
So one of the really special elements and one of the things I'm very proud of is that Kate Diamond, Frank's wife, becomes a huge part of the film because she's a huge part of opening and maintaining the restaurant. And that's not something you see in most chef documentaries. You don't see the impact of, you know, restaurant life on the family. And it's incredible. And it's really hard for the spouse because the chef is there all the time. One of my favorite lines in the whole film is from Michel Richard. And he says, you know, when I'm in my restaurant, I want to be home. And when I'm there, I want to be with my wife.
It's in the trailer.
And it's in the trailer. Yeah, absolutely. So, that is a special and extremely intimate part of the film. And so you'll have to see, you know, what happens when you watch the film.
You mentioned him. He passed away during the film or late, like, I guess, last year.
Yeah. So Michel Richard passed away. And that was honestly one of, like, the saddest days of my life. I just absolutely bawled. Just going back to the very beginning, he was actually the second interview that I filmed. And he was magical on camera, just, you know, bubbling with life. I mean, he was born to be on camera. And when I filmed his interview, I knew that I had something special going, you know. And that kind of put the pressure on for me to make the rest of the film amazing. Right. And 2 weeks before we finished editing, he passed away.
Oh my
so
God.
He never got to see the final film. He did get to see the trailer, which he's a huge part of. So he absolutely loved that. So he knew where we were going. But yeah, it was super sad. He never got to see it.
But now, I mean, he didn't get to see it, but now in a way he's sort of frozen in time.
Absolutely.
There. And there's even some lines that have some extra resonance now where he says, you know, I've done this for 50 years and it's my life and I hope to do it another 50 years. And
yeah,
it's just, man, that'll tug at your heart.
Yeah.
Now.
Oh, I'm almost choking up right now. He really is a special part of the film. And who doesn't want, you know, a classical French chef in their dog?
But how did you reach out to him and get him to, you know, do it?
So a friend of mine just had a connection to his restaurant, Central. They actually knew the general manager and they, you know, said, give him a call. So we gave him a call and he absolutely agreed to do it. And it was great. It was really great. And actually that we ended up having the most unbelievable lunch at Central with him. He brought out just about everything on the menu, including all of the desserts. And it was one of the most memorable things about, you know, filming the doc over 3 years was that lunch with him.
That's so great. Yeah. So how does he factor into the movie then? Is he just sort of providing just the, you know, the wise old sage, you know, about what it's like, how hard it is to open a restaurant in general?
So the reason I brought Michel Richard into the film is because I wanted to have someone that, you know, had a real sparkle that was going to be able to talk about, you know, what it takes to open and maintain a restaurant. And he has opened a lot of restaurants, some of which were super successful. He's a multi James Beard Award winning chef. And some of his restaurants succeeded, some of them did not. So he knew kind of both sides of that. But his real role in the film is talking about the passion that it takes to maintain a restaurant and the love that it takes to do it, which was really great. So I brought on some other all-stars, we called them. Mike Isabella plays a big role in the film, which he is just absolutely fantastic. And his role is really talking about what a chef has to do outside of cooking good food. There is so much management of the operation and so much stuff that goes wrong that, you know, one of his best lines is that, like, you're not going to get to spend 100% of your time on the food. And that, honestly, is the hardest thing for both Frank and Aaron.
Really? I bet. Yeah. I can imagine. Well, speaking of that, we kind of went into the challenges at Frank's place, but what about at Rose's? What were going and shooting in there? Did they keep the music playing? Was it the similar? Was it a tight, just as tight of a space? Or, you know, what unique things did that place pose?
Sure. So they did actually. So Rose's Luxury did actually keep their music going, and it drove me insane. They were willing to turn it down a little bit more than Frank. But that was super tight as well, and super hot. The flames were a lot higher. But there was not a lot of room for me to move around. But I just decided that I had to do it for the good of the film. And I just got in there, and Aaron gave me a few looks sometime, like, what are you doing back there? But he, you know, put a smile on and let me do it. But, you know, as his restaurant became more and more popular, filming in there, just everyone's life became a lot more stressful. And so I was, you know, kind of walking around on eggshells for a little bit. So the crew that I focused on outside of Aaron were awesome. One of them was a sous chef, another was a waitress. And I knew that as Aaron got more and more busy, he was going to pull farther and farther away from the film. And my prediction was correct. So luckily, I had kind of been telling Aaron's story through the eyes of his sous chefs and his wait staff. And they were just unbelievable and willing from day one to be on camera. And as Adrian Muse said, who's came on during the post-production process, he says, usually the most willing participants are the best ones. And sure enough, and everyone in both restaurants was really amazing. And they were super into the film and kind of understood where I was going. And they were just open and honest and really genuine, and they are the ones that make the film truly special.
That's awesome. How many days did you shoot at each place, and then how many hours of footage did you have at the end?
Sure. So great question. So I shot about 30 to 35 days in each restaurant, and then there were, you know, 10 or 15 days outside of that where I was filming with the all-star chefs, you know, Mike Isabella and Tim Carman, the food writer of the Washington Post, and the biggest catch of all was Danny Meyer, the famed New York restaurateur and owner of Shake Shack Union Square Cafe and everything. So it was about 85 days of filming. So it was
over a period of how many years?
Over a period of almost 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, the kind of trick was trying not to create too much media. But, you know, when I went in and filmed random days in the restaurant, I would, you know, be in there for 8 or 10 hours a day and, you know, roll for, you know, almost 5 of that. I would just go in, turn the camera on because, you know, when you're shooting a live doc, you're not going to I don't ask anyone to do anything over again.
Right.
So you just got to keep rolling. So there are hundreds of hours of footage. And, you know, it boils down to 90 minutes most of the time. You know, a narrative film, it's kind of a 5-to-1 ratio. And this was about a, you know, a 350-to-1 ratio, which is pretty brutal in the edit process.
I'm sure for something like this, and most docs, you know, it's a lot of your writing, screenwriting isn't done in the editing phase in a way. You know, you're putting it together based on what you got too. So
absolutely. And one of the keys to ending up having the successful edit is, and this is a good tip I think for a lot of filmmakers, is I did a lot of like pre-interview conversations with the chefs and their staff. So that I knew what questions to ask. And a lot of times I had already, I knew the answer, so that as I was plotting away over the years, I sort of knew where to go and the right questions to ask. And that helped a lot for sure.
So don't just show up cold to do your documentary interview. Have some pre-conversations. There you go. Tip from the pro.
That's right.
Dustin Harrison. That's great. Awesome. What else have we not covered yet? I mean, who edited it? How did you get it down?
Great.
Those 90 minutes.
So Adrian Muse, who's a filmmaker in DC, was a big part of the success of the post-production process. He had helped me on a couple of the shoots over the years, and when he had seen everything that I had shot, he knew, you know, I had something special in the can, and he's like, you know what, dude, I'm gonna help you raise money and I want to help you edit it. And I was like, you know what, I want you to help me do those two things. And he went out and, you know, raised a ton of money, and we were able to edit full time on the documentary for a little bit under a year. And he was just, you know, absolutely awesome. And he had feature documentary editing experience, and that's, you know, pretty hard to find around here. So he was just a super awesome partner and a lot of fun. But we had a lot of help from musicians in the area and, you know, people that had lived in D.C. So it's a really D.C.-centric production. And, you know, we didn't have $1 million, so we had to do everything, you know, on a relatively tight budget.
Well, you mentioned that the Roses Luxury founder did a Kickstarter. Did you have to do anything similar for your movie? Or if not, how did you get it financed?
So, great question. I actually was lucky enough not to have to do a Kickstarter campaign, which can be, you know, brutal and soul-crushing and take a long time, and you might not get what you want.
Right.
I was able to find two investors that, you know, knew the story of both restaurants and had seen some of the footage and watched the trailer and just absolutely fell in love, and they wanted to be a part of it, and they were willing to give us what we needed to get it done, which was absolutely amazing. And the team that we surrounded ourselves with for post-production, including Image Factory DC and some DC-based musicians and some musicians based in Austin, we're willing to do everything that we needed to do within budget, and it was awesome.
That's awesome. And I hear, in addition to these festivals, you also, they're not a distributor, but the sales. Who'd you mention?
Yeah, so we got picked up by a top tier sales team, which was absolutely a dream come true. They're called Preferred Content, and they're run by Kevin Iwashima, and they are unbelievable. And they are famous for having sold Chef's Table and Jiro Dreams of Sushi, so we're in really good hands. So we're in talks with, you know, lots of different companies, Netflix and Hulu.
How'd you find Preferred Content? Like, how did they hear about it?
So the process of getting Preferred Content on board was a really interesting one. We decided to wait and see if we were going to win any awards at these festivals, because the film then becomes super attractive.
Sure.
And lucky enough, at Cinequest,
the audience award.
We got the audience award, and that to a sales team is actually the most valuable award, right, even more than a jury award.
Sure. That's what the people want to watch.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So they watched the film and they loved it, and we actually had our choice of sales teams, which was a pretty special feeling as well.
Look at you.
Yeah, so that felt pretty good.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, so but before any of that, come see it at AFI Docs. Why should we come out?
It's more than just about the food. It's about what and who it takes to open and maintain a restaurant, and it's super intimate. And both the chefs and their staffs gave me unbelievable access to their heart and souls, which is what it takes to, you know, keep these restaurants going. And it'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. It'll make you hungry. And I hope everyone comes and sees it.
That's the great line right there.
It was good.
All right, I love it. Yeah. It sounds great. It sounds like, you know, like you're saying, it's not just for foodies. Anyone opening a small business or anything can relate to that part. But at the same time, the foodies can appreciate. I mean, you're there on the ground floor of DC, the DC restaurant scene, like on the cusp of it getting all this national acclaim, as you know, with Bon Appetit.
Well,
that's so
that was one of the amazing things about the film, is it really captures the rise of the DC food scene.
The zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's just absolutely super lucky on that point. And at the very beginning of the film, Michelle Richard says, you know, DC is a great food town, but it's not New York yet. It's getting there a few more years. And sure enough, you know, DC won the Bon Appetit Award for, you know, best new food town.
He saw it coming.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you were able to get in there as that rise was happening and document it for all of us. So we appreciate you taking the time. Come out again. It's New Chefs on the Block at AFI Docs. Do you remember the day?
I sure do. It's two screenings at AFI. The first one is Friday at 4:00 at the East Street Theater in DC. That one's sold out, which is super exciting. But
there's another chance to see it, though. There's another chance.
Sunday, 4:00, AFI Silver Theater. So hope you can make it. There are limited seats left, so do not delay. But you can check out the website at newchefsontheblock.com and see the trailer and see who's in the film.
Awesome. Dustin Harrison Atlas on WTOP. Thank you so much for coming in, and I'm so happy for all your success. Keep
Huge
us posted on how it goes.
Huge pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much.